Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you want. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. This week's edition brings you the second half of my recent guest-packed MK3D live show recorded at the BFI South Bank. In last week's podcast, we heard from actor Kate Dickey and critic and broadcaster Eleni Jones. In this week's pod, my guests are Posy Dixon, director of the remarkable documentary Keyboard Fantasies, Jason Fleming and Vanette Robinson talking about their amazing single-shot drama Boiling Point, and Miriam Margolyes and Lucy Darwin, who recently filmed a road trip in Driving Miss Margolyes. It's a packed show, and a quick word of warning, it does include some fruity language. So sit back, relax, and enjoy a front row seat for the second half of MK3D Live from the BFI South Bank. Now, if you're a film lover, you'll probably know that the BIFFA nominations just happened. A whole load of films have been nominated, films like Boiling Point, Belfast, Souvenir Part 2, which I'm desperate to see, After Love, Censor, which Kate was just talking about. Censor's got a bunch of nominations. The new Clive Barnard's got a nomination. One of the films that is nominated for Best Documentary is Keyboard Fantasies. Here is the trailer.
You're not allowed to see the secret stash. Just teasing. I figured it would be nice to have the originals. So that was the original. The first festival that I did, I thought, oh, probably 40 or 50 people will show up, right? So 300 people showed up. I'm like in Stunziesville, looking out at this audience.
Thank you.
And I realized that 90% of them were youth.
Let it go, let it go now.
They were in their 20s.
Beverly Glenn Copeland, Sunset Village. This record got me through a very, very difficult part of my life.
Oh, and Charlie.
I find it quite hard to listen to now.
Oh, Charlie.
It's funny the world that he found for himself. He just like met a bunch of like 20-year-old musician folks and then was like back in it instantly. He's like completely out of time and place always.
This is why I like to hang with them, right? You think in ways that it's taken me years to be able to come to. For me, it's like I've gone to school. They're introducing me to so much.
Deep river, my home is over Jordan.
I've never needed to be on stage. It's not about being on stage. For me, it's about encouraging youth. That's what it's about.
It's a terrific documentary. As I said, it's been BAFTA nominated. Please welcome to the stage the director, Posy Dixon. Congratulations on the BIFFA nomination.
Thank
Thank you very much.
How important is it? How important are the Biffers?
Oh, well, I've just been away, actually, with Glenn, shooting some more music with him, so I've been quite out of touch with the world, and we heard about it.
How did you find out? Week.
Someone messaged me while I was asleep.
So did you wake up to the message that you'd been Biffing away?
Yeah.
Is it fabulously thrilling?
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting. We had a weird run because the film came out just as COVID hit. So we had this whole festival run that we didn't get to go to IRL.
Yeah.
So it's all been quite disjointed.
Okay. So for people that don't know anything about the subject, how did all this happen? How did you come across this?
Okay. So Glenn wrote this beautiful record in the 80s called Keyboard Fantasies. Which in about maybe 2015 started to get a kind of underground following amongst record diggers.
Because it had basically come out and had some attention, but it had been totally overlooked.
Yeah, he made 200 cassette tapes and he sold 30 and the rest stayed in his cupboard.
Wow.
And then he just moved on and he's been making music ever since. And then in 2015, a record collector in Japan who owned a record store in Japan emailed him and was like, "Ooh, do you have any more copies of Keyboard Fantasies? Your cassette tape is a collector's item." And Glenn was like, "Yeah, sure." Finally, someone wants the other 150. Yeah, so went in, sent them off to Japan, sold them out in a week or two, and then someone re-released that record, and then very slowly, like, momentum started to build.
And how did you come across the story?
I the music came first, and the music leads this whole film. Like, the whole film is completely led by his music. So I heard a friend of mine played it, and I mean, you can hear his voice is just so beautiful. It's so unique sounding. And I was in the studio where we kind of pretend to work, listening to it, and I was like, "What? Who is this person? You know, like, what is this voice?" Couldn't tell what era, whether it was a man or a woman, like, no idea. So went digging around trying to find more music by Beverly Glenn Copeland, and after a lot of digging, which I love doing, found my way to Glenn. He transitioned in like the early 90s, so yeah. It's going by the name Glenn Copeland, and we just struck up a friendship online.
One of the things that's most remarkable about the story, which I confess I didn't know anything about at all before I saw your documentary, is how much he becomes an inspirational figure for much younger people. And he talks all the time about, "This is what I was actually here for." He said he spent a long period wondering exactly why he was here. He was making music, but people weren't paying attention. And he said, "Actually, this is why I was here. I was here to tell these people..." Actually, this makes me very... He said, "I was here to tell these people how loved they are." Which is such a lovely moment.
Yeah, it's really... And it was that... So before we spoke on Skype, like, once a month for about a year or two before I could afford to go and meet him. And that was the first time we spoke, he told me that. He was like, "I believe I've got this message for your generation." Because he wrote the record when we were all being born in the mid-80s. And he's like, "The audience... you've just arrived, like, you're just ready for me." And that's why I've been ignored, and just not ignored, but, you know, just making music and no one's really been paying any attention.
And what does he make of the documentary?
I think the whole thing, Glenn's like, he's so interesting. All he wants to do is make music. Like, literally, he wants to make music, spend time with his beautiful wife, and everything else is kind of an enjoyable show going on around him that I think he gets energy from. He loves communicating and talking with people, but he's not really that bothered, you know?
So there's a documentary about him, but he's not that bothered.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, I think he is... There's a part in it we recreated. There was, like, no archive at all, because he lives very much in the present. So there was a lot of, like, pulling archive and putting different scenes together to tell the story of his youth. And we did shoot one scene, which was a recreation of his dad playing piano.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that really moved him. Like, when he saw that, I think that really took his breath away.
And what about the live performances in which, I mean, we hear this stuff about, you know, "I don't know whether there's going to be anybody out there." Then you go out there and it's not just that there is an audience, but there is an audience who have that kind of devotion. People don't just like the music, they love the music. And there are so many of them saying, "It means so much to me." It's dangerous ground to get into when you have fans who love music that much. Were you aware of sort of treading on difficult areas?
I was very aware of the power of telling someone's story that hasn't been told before.
Yeah.
So I was hyper aware of that and was in communication with Glenn the whole way through, because it the first time he went on CBC Radio a year or two ago, I'd done a Kickstarter to help fund the start of the film, and the DJ on the radio read out my Kickstarter spiel as Glenn's introduction. Yeah. And that made me realise, I was like, oh shit, what I'm writing is actually going to continue having waves, you know? So I was aware of that, but I think there'd been so little of Glenn on screen or anywhere that I feel like I wanted to give people the opportunity I had to sit with him for hours and hours and talk, because he's such a wonderful orator and he's such a great elder figure.
Yeah, and so, and has this really mellifluous speaking voice. I mean, not just singing voice, but his speaking voice is really easy on the ear.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So what about the disappointment of everything set up and then COVID happened? Is everything now happening?
Yeah, I mean, we had a really beautiful festival run. It was just done from my living room instead of going around.
Was that all right?
It was fine. I think what I was sad about was not getting to meet the other filmmakers, because I think when you're in your kind of independent filmmaking world, you have quite a small bubble in a way. And I was really excited to meet the people, the other filmmakers on the circuit.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. But, you know, I was so impressed by all the film festivals pulling digital festivals together with like 2 weeks' notice.
People did unbelievably fast. I mean, it was incredible how quickly everybody got online.
Yeah.
And incredible how quickly everyone got absolutely sick of Zoom.
Yeah, 100%.
I never want to be on Zoom ever again in my whole life.
I know. And I kept being like, I could be in Russia and San Francisco. I'm just in my bedroom chatting on the computer. You know.
The BIFFA nomination, it is significant, isn't it? Because the film opens this Friday.
Yeah.
And the fact that the nomination happened this week will presumably raise the profile of the film.
I hope so. Yeah, it's been like a slow build the whole way through. When we made it, I literally didn't know if anyone was even going to want to watch it. Like, he was so niche still. And ever since meeting him, like, the film and his music, they've been kind of going up and up and up. So it just feels like this momentum's building, which is really exciting.
When is the BIFFAs?
I have no idea.
I'm a film critic, I don't know anything.
No.
Will you be going in person?
I don't know. I'm really disorganised. You can probably.
Well, you have to go. Does it mean, you know, because you
could
win?
I would love to go. I don't know if I'm invited.
Have you won awards before?
Little ones for this film.
Okay.
Like small film festival awards.
Okay. But you haven't had the moment of being on stage holding an award.
God, no.
I mentioned this because I've won 2 Sonnies.
Oh, right.
I was at both of them.
And how was that for you?
It's fantastic. I've been at every single award ceremony I've ever been nominated. Most of the time you lose, but when you win, it's just like people say awards are rubbish. They are until you win them, and then they're absolutely
brilliant. And then you're
brilliant.
Like...
Yes.
We have a really lovely one from a small Portuguese music film festival, and they sent, in the middle of COVID, a courier with an award that is a wooden bird that they sent over from Lisbon, which is adorable.
Well, I wish you every success at the BIFFAs. As I said, the film opens Friday in cinemas and online, or...
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. Do check it out. It's really well worth seeing. Thank you so much.
Thank
Congratulations on the BIFFA nomination. I realised when I was saying that, because of course that opens this Friday, and I said of Kate's film Shepherd that it opens this Friday, but it doesn't, it opens in 2 weeks, and it's November the 24th, but it's because I never refer to my notes and I can't remember anything. So also in the BIFFA nominations, a couple of films got 11 nominations. One of them is an extraordinary film called Boiling Point, all of which is shot in one take. And it is a really remarkable anxiety-inducing drama. I'm very pleased to say, from Boiling Point, which has 11 BIFFA nominations, we have Vinette Robinson and Jason Fleming. Can we need another chair, please? Welcome to the show. Congratulations on 11 BIFFA nominations. Is it a big deal?
Not when you don't get one. The caterer's got one, I didn't.
Okay, explain, because it looks like it is a one-take film. Is it?
Yes. I mean, that's the question that everyone
of course
asks. But it truly is just one take.
And for people who haven't seen the film, which I have, what's it about?
Well, it's set over one night in a very busy night in a restaurant, and it sort of follows the central character played by Stephen Graham, who is a head chef under pressure.
Increasing pressure.
And our director, who also co-wrote the film, Phil, he was an actor, but for many years to support his acting, he worked in kitchens. And he's been very honest about the fact that this film is based on his real life experiences, that everything in the film is something he's either experienced himself or witnessed. And it explores the sort of mental health issues and the pressure that exists in that industry.
Okay. We have two clips, because although the film is in one shot, you two aren't in the same clip together. So the first one we're going to show is a clip which you're in, which is at the beginning of the evening. The food health inspectors have just been in, and they've had a health inspection in which they've been downgraded from a 5 to a 3.
Yeah.
And this is the beginning of turning the heat up on what's going to happen for the rest of the film. So let's take a look.
It's a fucking joke, isn't it? How do you wash your hands, love?
I know, dude.
Sorry, what?
In the sink.
In the sink. Which
All
sink?
Right. Andy. That's
which sink?
Andy.
No, hang on, Carly. No, Carly, wait a minute, love.
Carly,
this is fucking basic GCSE fucking cooking
school. And it's her first week, so it's my responsibility.
It's not a first week in any fucking kitchen, though, is it? You've worked in kitchens before, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
That's why you're here. You've worked in kitchens before, yeah?
Yes.
Yes, what?
Yes, chef.
Yes, chef. So what's that sink for, kid?
Food.
For what?
Food.
What do you not do in that sink?
Wash your hands.
Wash your what?
Hands.
Wash your hands, yeah. Fucking gobshite here. You using the wrong fucking sink. And you, soft ass, what are you playing at?
What do you mean, sir?
What do you mean? What do I mean? What the fuck are you doing?
I'm not supposed to be on this section, chef.
Tony, how long have you worked here, lad?
No, I've been here, no, but it's Hobbs. It's Hobbs.
Tony, how long have you worked here, son?
Yeah.
A year? He's saying you've got no fucking gloves on. Cross-contamination with the oysters.
Yeah, chef, sorry.
Put your fucking gloves on.
Sorry.
Put your gloves on, son. Now, sorry. Listen, Tony, you book your fucking ideas up, lad, because there's a million kids out there who would die for this fucking opportunity you've been given.
Yes, chef.
Yeah?
Yes,
chef. Show some fucking respect. Respect your fucking self. Put your fucking socks up.
Sorry, chef.
Yes. Right, look, every single one of you, that goes for all of you, right across the board, sort your own fucking sections out. Yeah?
Yes, chef.
Yeah?
Yes, chef.
All right, we're going to get this back up to a fucking 5. Yeah?
Yes, chef.
Okay, all right, where are we?
Right, we've called in what we could, but we're still a bit tight on some items. But I think we've still got a good menu. So we are fine on the oysters, the salmon, the liver. We're a bit low on the soup. We couldn't get beef anywhere.
Okay, no, I'm sorry about that.
It's all right, the beef's off.
No, look, I'll phone him in a bit. I'll get on Schmidt's in a bit.
It's too late.
It's fine. We've got mackerel. We've got duck, brill, risotto. Now, we've got just about enough lamb?
No, we haven't got enough lamb.
Tell me about the experience of doing this in... Because, obviously, you know, there are scenes, essentially. I mean...
Camera sort of follows.
Exactly. So... How does it feel? I mean, it is literally being filmed in one take, but the best thing about it is I forgot watching the film that that's what the central thing is. I just felt like I was being propelled through this increasingly stressful world. How was it to be in it?
Exhilarating and terrifying. We didn't get much rehearsal, a bit more than Stephen said.
Yeah, Stephen sent me a message. He said, we rehearsed for one day, we shot it the next day. And I said, is that true? And you said, no.
No. We rehearsed for 5 days, but that's still not very much when all the dialogue's completely improvised from a scripted story. There's the choreography of the kitchen. We'd never been in a kitchen before, really. I mean, I did a couple of, like, trial shifts, but I'd never, like, you have to look like you know what you're doing, all the choreography of the props and the camera. So it felt like a lot to achieve in 5 days.
You do look like you know what you're doing. Everyone talks like they, like, you know, because it's people do talk like they are versed in the trade. So could you now bluff your way through an actual kitchen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. That is a bit... I think the thing... I didn't really know that world. We all go to restaurants and have a lovely time, but the mental health issues and the lack of support in those industries that we see, I never really knew about. And there's no way that I could deal with that pressure.
It's a brutal environment.
Mm. It really is. And that's why so many people struggle with addiction and substance abuse, because they're long hours and they're passionate about what they do. It's not always brilliantly paid, you know, it's really antisocial hours, and the way of coping is to have a drink at the end of the night. But where does that switch off? How do you switch off? Like, you know, it must be like coming off stage or something.
So the hours as well. I mean, most actors have worked in kitchens or in restaurants, some more than others, me included. And Stevie, in that scene, his abuse to the staff is very familiar. I mean, it's that is the environment. You know, it's a very, very brutal place. I think it's a really good reflection of that world.
And how would you describe your character? Because your character is, I think, very sympathetically, but how would you describe your character?
Well, she's the sous chef, and her and Andy have a long-running, you know, friendship, and they rely on each other. But he is losing it. He's going down, and she's trying to hold the ship together. But he's compromising her to the point, you know. Yeah. We see the ramifications of that in the film.
So she's kind of the moral heart of the film, Jason. Your character, not so much.
No.
Tell me who he is, and then we'll see a clip.
Well, my character has basically lent him money to start the restaurant, and then his career and his restaurant has started to go downhill, and he needs the money back. So he appears to be a friend, but he's a friend who's very desperate and who is prepared to do anything in order to get his money back off this kid who is under enough pressure as it is.
And we're going to see a clip. I'm going to say this, and again, I mean this as a compliment. You can feel the slime.
Unctuous. When you called unctuous?
Unctuous, they call me. It's been said before.
Let's have a look.
Hey, Andy.
Hello, mate.
Namaste, chef. Hi. Namaste. Good to see you, mate.
Nice to see you.
Hello. Critic, Sarah Southworth, as you know.
Hello, Sarah. Hi, really nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you.
Come and
have
a quick glass with us, yeah? Just a quickie.
Oh, I should really get back to the kitchen with snowed under this, you know what I mean?
Just have
let them do their thing. You have a glass of wine, right?
Okay.
It's gorgeous.
Thank
it's
you.
Lovely.
Thank you very much.
Mm. There we go.
No, there's your glass.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Cheers.
Cheers.
Happy Christmas.
Cheers.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.
Mm. Oh, that's nice.
Mm. That is good. Well, I had no idea you were coming.
It was a last minute thing, you know. So this one mentioned that he was coming, and I've been wanting to come. You know, pre Christmas treat.
Yeah, you know, you don't know where capacity, are you?
I know that look.
the fear.
No. Off duty.
Okay.
So,
mate.
Cook whatever.
Well, if I'd known you was coming, do you know what I mean? I'd have made sure.
We're the good guys.
When did you boot?
The book is coming in, what's it, February 23rd,
24th. No, not when did you book? when did you book to come here?
Sorry.
Pardon me.
We booked 2 days ago, but I phoned you and texted you and you didn't get back. But
it's cool, it's fine.
But listen, we're here to support you.
Yes, and right? You know, just, you don't need my endorsement, so don't worry about that.
Such a
buzz in
here.
This place. It's
yeah.
Great.
No, it's,
you know, it's busy.
Huh?
It's busy tonight. Yeah, very busy.
I'm busy. Yeah, super busy with the TV stuff and everything's gone mental. But, I mean, yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, the show's rocketing.
Yeah, I saw one episode.
Not the only one that saw one episode. There's 7 million people watch it, so, you know, full series. Must be doing something right.
Yeah, no.
This menu is I recognise all of this stuff. I mean, this is all my dishes. I mean, I love the way it's on a bit of paper, but there's the duck with the soy.
Yeah, that was my dish.
I love the, yeah, what, 7 million people watched it, so I must be doing something right. Describe that character for me.
Well, he's a celebrity chef, you know, and it's difficult to say which one it's based on, obviously. but it's fun, you know. I mean, Stevie's a great friend of mine. We were just talking to him. He's very loyal, and we've probably done 6 jobs together in the last 3 years. And he's incredible like that. He just phones up and he goes, "Listen, mate, there's this job. If you want it, it's yours. It's done. It's all sorted out." And so it's lovely to sort of spar with him, you know, and doing something like that, which is live, is the closest I'm going to get to the theatre. So. That's great fun, you know, to have that pressure. You know, you're saying, you were asking about the pressure of it, but my character comes in 42 minutes into the thing, so you're sitting there going... And there's a kid who comes on after me who has to go outside, light a cigarette, and if it doesn't light, it's a really important plot point. It has to light, you know what I mean? And so I was sort of panicking about my little bit, but this guy has to light a cigarette and he has to take a drag and he has to flick it into a dustbin. And it, you know, it's exciting. It's really exciting to put that pressure on yourself, especially after doing years and years of filming. It's great to get excited again.
And that was the second take, is that right?
Third.
Okay, fine.
I was better in the second, but they went with it.
But is there, okay? But is there any part of you that thinks that? Oh, damn! They used the third one. I was great in the first.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, it's about the piece, isn't it?
Yeah, because we were supposed to shoot it twice a night on 4 consecutive nights. And on the second night, we got shut down because it was 2019 and COVID had just hit. But we did the third take and we all felt great, but there was some technical issues.
Yeah.
And then they told us after that when we were going to shut down that night. And then we did the fourth take and everyone was just like, hated it.
Right.
But Phil, the director, was like, "No, it's the fourth take." And we were like, "No, are you mad? Yeah. But he is, because he was watching for the technical things on the camera. But then when he watched it back, it's the third take we've used because.
And it's interesting because, like, for actors, there's always that thing, you know, where technically it has to be right, you know, if it's out of focus or if they miss the shot. It's so the camera operators and the DOPs and the directors are constantly going again and again for the camera. Whereas we do our thing, and then if you forget a line, they're like, "Come on, we need to hurry up." And you're like, "Hold on, mate. I dropped the line once, you know, and we've done 15 takes for the camera." But it's always an interesting battle between the two departments about which one they choose. Obviously, it's not up to us.
Was it a fun experience at the end? I mean, I know it sounds like it was exhausting and doing it twice in the night, but was it a positive experience?
Oh, yeah, it was great. Like... To make a film like that, everybody needs to show up on their A game, and they did. There was such a great like atmosphere. Everyone came to work like really excited, and
one of the biffers is for casting, and you know, there's probably, I don't know, maybe there's 42 speaking parts in it, maybe a few more, but it was great because they're all young, they're all amazing, you know, really, really like committed, and a lot of them. You know, the second or third job, or some of them first job, and it was great to be part of that atmosphere and feel the buzz off that. It was really exciting.
And all the crew and stuff was, you know, who were running around in costume because they're having to set things when the camera pans up and then it's coming back. So,
I mean, I think it's amazing that just during the course of that, considering it is one take, you never see a sound man running out of the way, or you know, I know I'm assuming that's not been digitized yet. No. It's actually that it is done.
They're dressed as waiters.
Fantastic.
Well, there'd be a guy with a big, huge poly putting it onto you like that. And as the camera turned down, he just disappear underneath. It's really cool. It's really cool to watch.
Do go and see it, and also see it in a cinema if you can, because it has a really sort of breathtaking quality to it. And it is, and I mean this as a compliment, it is exhausting to watch because you do feel the tension being ratcheted up all the way through. I want to ask you very quickly, you have another film coming out, the Mark Gatiss Project.
Yes.
Do you want to say something very quickly about that?
Oh, about a really brilliant co-star.
Yeah, who did you appear with in The Amazing Mr. Blunden, which is coming out very soon?
His debut acting role, ladies and gentlemen.
Almost certainly on the cutting room floor, and almost certainly not in the film. But how wonderful to have done The Amazing Mr. Blunden. It's such a
It's such a beautiful script. It's Mark Gatiss has written and, well, adapted it and has directed it. It's one of his and your favourite films from childhood.
It's absolutely beautiful. I can't wait to see it. I think we're going to do a cast and crew Q&A here at the BFI, I believe. I'm looking to you for reassurance, but
I don't know.
You have no idea at all.
I think
that is happening. Jason, what are you up to?
I've just finished doing a show called Alder with Stevie Graham, funnily enough.
We only work with Stevie.
So I've just finished that, and everything's great. I'm very happily spending a couple of months with the twins, my 10-year-old twin boys, which I said today, I was like, babe, I've got to go and support the film. I can't put them to bed. And this is a lot easier than putting 10-year-old twins to bed.
Well, listen, congratulations on that whopping number of biffers. And I'm sure the film's going to get a great audience because it is a really exhilarating experience. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I said it was a packed show. We have literally no breathing space whatsoever. Our final two guests have worked together on a brilliant new film that's currently available online. And one of them you've met before. One of them is coming to MK3D for the first time. Please welcome to the stage Lucy Darwin and Miriam Margulies. Welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you both.
Thank you very much.
Lucy, you'll remember, of course, because Lucy has made some brilliant documentaries, like He Dreams of Giants, about Terry Gilliam's attempts to make Lost in La Mancha. Lucy also produced The Hamster Factor and Match Point. And Lucy and I go back, a very, very long way. When you and I first met, you were working publicity at Columbia?
Yeah,
that was about 35 years ago.
25 years ago. Some years ago. So tell us first, what is driving Ms. Margulies? What is it?
It's kind of a happy accident. Miriam was in the middle of lockdown in Europe, where Europe actually was officially closed. And Miriam was in Italy, where she'd been hiding from COVID for 10 months, 9 months. I always forget how many. A long time. And she advertised on Facebook for somebody to drive in a camper van, preferably, from London to Italy and then back to London, to bring her back to London. There was a sort of fear that if Miriam wasn't in a camper van, she wouldn't be able to go to the loo, because she thought that all the service stations would be closed in France and Italy, but they actually were open, so that was a good thing. And I volunteered to drive. I was already in the south of France, and I said, well, I'll just drive and pick you up, and then we'll go back. And then she and I decided on a Zoom call, the dreaded Zoom calls, that we would make a video diary.
It was her idea. I had no notion this was going to happen.
Let's get a bit of a flavour. We've got a couple of clips from it. This is a clip from early on in the piece. You can find it on the... It's still on the Guardian website, because it ran in The Observer with a lovely piece, and there was a connection to the film there. Here, we're going to show two clips. This is the first clip. I think it's fairly self-explanatory what's going on. I have to say, your pouring of measures of alcohol is really astonishing. So Have a look.
Well done! You made it.
Hello, Liz.
Hiya. Good to see you.
I have to do that, don't I?
How
hello,
are you?
Sweetheart.
Do you want a wee wee?
No, I'm fine, actually.
Oh, well, now you've That's got always moons. The first thing I think of. Where are you?
I'm here. Oh, my God, it's heavenly. I can't understand why you would want to go back.
Well, I don't. Here's your drink. Not very strong gin, is it? Come on, let's fill you up a bit. I don't think that's...
You don't think it's strong enough?
I don't.
Okay.
That should do it.
Thank you.
We finished the Prince
God,
Charles
Miriam.
Gin. Is that okay? That's better, is it?
That's going to have me under the table very quickly.
That's where we want you, darling. You
right, know. Tell me about the COVID test.
I hated it. I must say, it's one of the most unpleasant things I've ever had. I kind of gripped this woman because, you know, when something's right up your nose, I said, horrible, horrible. I was trying
have
to
you
find
not it. Had one before?
No, she no. hasn't.
Is that your very first COVID
My
test?
My first test. I was a virgin till then.
So you say it was Lucy's idea, but you obviously agreed to it. And what comes out is a fantastic road movie. It's brilliant with the interaction between you. And it does seem to be, it doesn't seem like it's performance for the camera. It seems like what
No, it wasn't a performance for the camera. It was just what we were doing, wasn't it? I mean, it was just real. But I thought how extraordinary that anybody would bother to make a film of it. That was what I found it... very strange.
Well, I've got a friend in the audience who I spoke to about this idea after we decided we were going to do it. And I said to Alex, where are you? Wave. I said to Alex, do you think I should make this film? And he said to me very seriously, I would pay good money to be in a car with Miriam Margolyes.
So bet that's... you wouldn't, love.
Okay, on the subject of being in a car, can we see the second clip? Which two things about this. Firstly, yes, it's being in a car with Miriam Margolyes. Secondly, I think this, Lucy, also explains why it is that you are the successful producer that you are, because I don't think anyone would mess with you. Here we go.
Oh, Miriam, I think you're on.
Do you need passports?
You're going to have to do this.
We hate Brexit. I just want to tell you that.
Oh, I do.
It's the most appalling mistake.
Do you have your passenger available?
Yes.
The COVID test?
Yes.
Okay. And did you book the two tests you have to do in England?
Yes.
Yes, okay. We've done that.
I'm incredibly tempted to back up and go into the van lane, only now there's a van coming. Look. And do you think I'll get told off?
Probably.
What do you think? Right. I've got a disabled passenger who needs the bathroom.
I've got a disabled passenger who needs the bathroom.
Hello, I know we're not a van.
Hello there.
But we have a disabled passenger who needs the bathroom.
Okay.
Wow, Lucy. Woo. We're on.
You did it.
We would never have made it.
No, not if we were waiting in the other queue. Now we can relax.
Yeah. Amazing, isn't it?
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
And you did it, and you got through, and it was fantastic. Like I said, do see the whole film. It's like 40 minutes long, and it's really...
It's 27 minutes.
27?
It's on YouTube.
It's fantastic.
It's just very little and rather sweet, rather like me, I suppose.
Now, Miriam, let me grab this. This has just come out. This is Miriam's book. You were asked... why you wrote this, and you gave a very frank answer on the television. What did you say when you were asked why you wrote this book?
Well, I wrote it for the money. I mean, I was offered a huge amount of money, ridiculous. And of course, when you're old, you need it. So I that's why I wrote it.
Was it fun to write?
It became fun. It was a bit scary at the beginning, as writing is, but I started to enjoy it towards the end. And actually, I'm quite proud of it. And you can get it half price in Sainsbury's and Tesco.
And And it's number one on Amazon right now.
So, I know, that's amazing, isn't it?
So was this a bonding experience for you, the road trip? Did you become like family?
Yes, I think we rather did. I mean, I met Lucy first when you met her, when she was publicity in Colombia.
That's right.
And she handled the publicity for The Age of Innocence.
Yes.
And that's when I won the only BAFTA I've ever won. And she was there the night I got it. So, well,
Miriam, it's so brilliant that you've brought that up. Shall we see a clip of you in Age of Innocence?
Why not?
Very handsome. Very liberal. In my time, a cameo set in pearls was thought to be sufficient. But it's the hand that sets off the ring, isn't it, my dear Mr. Archer?
It's the new setting. It shows the stone beautifully. But it looks a little bare to old-fashioned eyes.
I hope you don't mean mine, my dear. I like all the novelties. My hands were modeled in Paris by the great Rocher. He should do maize. Show me, child. Her hand is so tempered. It's these modern sports that spread the joints. But the skin is white. And when's the wedding to be?
Oh, as soon as ever it can, if only you'll back me up, Mrs. Mingott.
We must give them time to get to know each other a little better, Mama.
Know each other? Everybody in New York has always known everybody. Don't wait till the bubble's off the wine. Marry them before Lent. I may catch pneumonia any winter now, and I want to give the wedding breakfast.
Oh, what a kind offer.
Even if she had not been grandmother to May, Mrs. Manson Mingott would still have been the first to receive the required betrothal visit. She was not only the matriarch of this world, she was nearly its dowager empress. Much of New York was already related to her, and she knew the remainder by marriage or by reputation.
The main thing about that is the voice, and that was through a wonderful dialect coach called Tim Monick, an American. Just brilliant. He gave me that voice.
But you, I mean, obviously you have a long history of voice work. Anyway, you have a very, very adept, flexible voice.
Thank you very much. I don't know what to say.
Thank you, we'll do fine.
I mean, that's what I have to offer. And the thing I asked Mr. Scorsese, why was he using so many English actors in an American piece? And he said, because I'm interested in brutality. That's interesting, don't you think?
How did you get on with Mr. Scorsese?
Oh, I loved him. I thought he was wonderful. He was enchanting, passionate about film. I'm not passionate about film. I don't understand film. I do it for the money. But it is, of course, it's interesting. But
we had a conversation before we got on the road, and because I was worried that we wouldn't have anything to talk about. Well. Anyway, I said to Miriam on a call that we had that I thought maybe we could have a discussion about road movies. Yeah. And she said, oh, I don't know anything about films. I know nothing about films. And I said, well, what about Thelma & Louise? That's a brilliant film, she said. Love that film. And I said, what about Paris, Texas, which happens to be my favourite film? And Miriam said, that is a sensational film. So it was... I think that if you're reminded, there are lots of films that you do like.
Oh, I like films. I just don't know anything about... You know, I couldn't talk about a film
the way that
you do, for example.
Okay, firstly, I think you could. Secondly, I think that you're very self-deprecating, which is very entertaining and very funny. But the fact is, when you look at your film CV, the fact is you do know loads and loads about film. Because, for a start... Martin Scorsese wouldn't cast you in a movie if he didn't know exactly what you were doing.
Well, he gave us brilliant direction, and he was adorable. I really, really liked him.
Is that the role of which you are most proud?
One of them. I think another one that I loved was being in a film that István Szabó, who's a Hungarian director, made, called Sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about three generations of a Hungarian Jewish family. And I played the first mother in the three generations. And I loved doing that because it was quite serious. And I often get to do, you know, funny things. And I'm not really interested in comedy, quite honestly. And I like it when I can be serious and be a different sort of person. And that was one of those times.
So do you have good memories of working with Miriam on Age of Innocence? Because obviously that was an awards-fated film, as you said, amazingly, your only BAFTA, which is astonishing. When you
it is astonishing.
It is astonishing. Outrageous, I think, is the correct word. Do you remember, you have good memories
we
of that?
We had a lot of fun. We did have a lot of fun.
Yes, it was wonderful. It was great being, and she knew what she was doing. I didn't like Jonathan Pryce. I think he's a wonderful actor, and he deserves all the accolades. But he's difficult. He wasn't very nice to Richard E. Grant, whom I happen to love, absolutely love. They didn't get on, and that was a bit of a nuisance. But I mean, it was wonderful doing that film. Really was.
Winona Ryder.
You're naughty to bring that up. Look, there are two reasons why I don't like Winona Ryder. I suppose I shouldn't say it. Well, anyway, one of the reasons is because she asked a sempstress, who was one of our dressers, to make her a dress, and the wardrobe supervisor said, now you've got to charge Winona Ryder for that because she's doing it on company time. And when this lady gave her the bill for the work she'd done, she looked at it and she just screwed it up and threw it on the floor and never paid her. And I thought that was really nasty and I didn't like that. And then the other thing that I didn't like was that it wasn't her fault exactly, but the studio put her forward as a supporting artist. Right. And she was above the title.
Yeah.
And that stopped me from being nominated for an Oscar, which I would have been. I know it, because I won the BAFTA.
Yeah, yeah.
And she wrote to every single member of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, a most corrupt bunch, as you know.
Yes. They are, absolutely.
She wrote personally to everyone, and she won the Foreign Press Award, and that started the... And then she won an Oscar.
As I believe I described the Hollywood Foreign Press Association in 2008, a bunch of unaccountable, corrupt bozos, and I stand by that.
Well, I do too. I'll stand by it as well.
Excellent. I want to show another clip from a very celebrated movie of yours. This is from Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, yes.
And this is something you have fond memories of.
I do, okay. Yes.
Let's have a look at the clip.
Oh, here's goodly gear.
God ye goody and fair, gentlewoman.
I desire some confidence with you.
I feel just like a little...
Oh, a bar.
You come to your father's? We'll go to dinner thither.
I will follow you.
Farewell, ancient lady, farewell!
If ye should lead her in a fool's paradise, as they say, it were a very gross kind of behavior, as they say. For the lady is young, and therefore, if you should deal double with her, truly it were an ill thing, and very weak dealing.
Bid her to come to confession this afternoon, and there she shall, at Friar Lawrence's cell, be shrived and married.
Leonardo DiCaprio was 5 years old when he made that film.
Wasn't he beautiful, though?
I think he still is, fairly.
No, not as beautiful as that. But he was truly beautiful and a very nice chap.
So what was it like making it? Because Baz Luhrmann is like a whirlwind of energy.
It was extraordinary because it was his passion and he absolutely was determined to do everything that was possible to make the film a success. And the big fish tank broke, and it's the glass broke, and it cost a fortune to replace it. And he insisted. He said, "You know, if you don't give me that tank again, I'll walk." He meant it. He wanted what he wanted, and he got it. And he made, I think, an absolutely superb film. It's wonderful. I didn't think it was that wonderful at the time. I thought it was a bit nutty. But now I see that it is a great achievement, and I'm thrilled that I was just a small part of that.
And it has aged brilliantly well because, you know, there's a new Spielberg West Side Story coming out, which obviously is Romeo and Juliet.
How absurd. How absurd.
Why is it absurd?
I'm just going to let you speak.
No, I just think when something has been done perfectly, don't do it again. Do something new, something different. You don't have to do it again.
The only thing I would say, so you and Lucy work together on this wonderful road movie. Will you work? Do you have future projects that you're going to collaborate on?
Oh, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, Miriam wants to go and do the...
Oh, yeah.
Well, you tell them.
Well, the other old lady in that picture...
Liz.
Is Liz Hodgkin, who was at school with me and at university. And there's a group of us, and we are together on Zoom quite often, all of us ex-Cambridge, and we want to go to China on the Trans-Siberian Express.
Wow.
And that's what we're going to film next.
So, Lucy, are you producing that?
Potentially. I've had discussions with them all. We've all talked about it.
And so I think it would be marvelous.
Really, I think it would be really good.
So, five or six old ladies, all in our 80s.
You're missing the important bit, which is that one of the... First of all, Liz, by the way, is... I just adore her. And they also have a friend who they were at school with who's actually living in Beijing. So the idea would be that we would go and
have a school reunion,
her.
An yes. old girls' reunion in Beijing.
And this would be a feature film?
Well, I don't know, a documentary.
Yes, a feature doc.
Yes.
So a feature doc.
Miriam, I hate to tell you, it's what Lucy makes.
Oh, I see. Okay. Feature doc, okay. What do I know?
And do we have a title?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
No.
I really want this to happen because it would, you know, if the driving doc was anything to go by, I think it would be absolutely fascinating. And are you still as excited about the possibility of filming stuff as you always were? Are you do you still enthused by it?
Oh yes, of course. I mean, as long as I'm alive, I hope that I will enjoy what I do, and I do enjoy it. It's wonderful. It's amazing to still be working. I've just done a film with Tamsin Gregg and Sally Phillips and Rocky Thakra, David Walliams and Andy McDowell. Yeah. You know, well-known American actress. And it was thrilling. And we did that in Wales. It's all about cancer.
Miriam, I can't help but say, and you're not doing that for the money. It sounds like you're doing
it. No, that I didn't do for the money.
Okay, so it's
that
only...
we did for the joy of it.
Okay, so you divide the project between things which are for the money and things which are for the joy.
I don't know if I divide them. I mean, I know what I'm doing. I know if I'm doing it for the money or if I'm doing it for the happiness.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's for both, but not often.
Okay.
Not often.
One of the things with the book is that you're very frank in the book about people that you've worked with. And one of the things that makes you such a delightful guest is that you, as I think you've just demonstrated, are happy to speak freely about what you think about things. Do you ever talk or write about stuff and then think afterwards, maybe I shouldn't have said that? Or are you at the point, do you not care?
I do sometimes think that perhaps I shouldn't have said something because it might hurt somebody. But well, mostly, they deserve
Winona,
it.
Winona Ryder. Winona Ryder is a shoplifter.
Well, she was. I mean, I know she might have had mental health problems, but, you know, she was a shoplifter, and I don't like her. So, I'm not... Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe I shouldn't have. But there, I said it again.
Look, it's been such a... I'm so glad that you could come on the show. It's lovely to have Lucy back. This is now your second or third?
Second.
You must come back again because, you know...
Well, hopefully.
So when you make this documentary, this documentary, when you're going this huge distance on the train, will you both come back and talk about it on the show?
Thank you very much, and thank you for having us today. It was lovely.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much, Miriam and Lucy. Well, that pretty much brings things to an end. What a roller coaster of an evening it has been. I'm just going to step in because there'll be so many people on stage, I'm terrified that I'm going to forget somebody. So please join me in thanking Kate Dickey. Eleni Jones. Posey Dixon. Vinette Robinson and Jason Fleming. Lucy Darwin and Miriam Margulies. Did I miss anyone? Oh yeah, no, we haven't done fun. We're gonna finish, as we always do, with a piece of music from a film, which kind of, you know, is just always a nice way of finishing the programme. Actually, before we do, I'll do the thank yous first. Thank you to Nick for doing all the clips. And for joining me on the BBC 4 screenshot programme on, not BBC 4, Radio 4, damn! You can sort it out in post-production. To Heather and the team for putting the show together, and to the BFI for having us. Nick, did I forget anyone? Did I forget? That was everyone, wasn't it? Yeah, okay, fine. So we're going to finish with this. This is the final scene from another round. I don't know whether any of you have seen it, but it's... The wonderful thing about this is this. I love musicals. I love dance. I love Mads Mikkelsen. I'm a big fan of Thomas Vinterberg. I did not expect all these things to be brought together in a free jazz dance fusion number at the end of another round, and yet somehow they are. Here is the majesty of the final scene of another round. Isn't that just brilliant? Listen, thank you ever so much. I'm amazed that we managed to get everything into this show, and next month we'll try and do even more. No, less. More. Okay, thank you very much. Take care. See you soon. Thank you. Well, there we are. I hope you enjoyed that second half of the most recent MK3D live show. If you missed the first half, which included Kate Dickey and Eleni Jones, there's still time to listen on last week's podcast. And if you fancy attending one of the live shows, they're every month at the BFI South Bank in London. Tickets are available at the BFI website. If you've enjoyed this podcast, remember to subscribe, tell your friends, and check out our Patreon page for a bunch of video extras. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Keep watching the skies.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right.
Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.